Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. I do want to encourage you to check out our other podcast, and this week I'm highlighting the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon. This is my newest Old Time Radio podcast where we bring you all sorts of rare and interesting old time radio programs in bite-sized chunks. It's a great opportunity to experience some lesser known gems and hear some really unique performances. This season already, we've featured a rare gospel music program, dug into the origins of the Who's On First comedy routine, and heard a recording of a real Silver Star winner. With the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon, we're playing either short 15-minute or less programs, or we're playing excerpts from longer programs. And you can subscribe to the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon wherever you get your podcasts or at snackwagon.net. But now we're going to get into today's episode of Ellery Queen. Now, we'd featured Ellery Queen back in season 6. And of course, Ellery Queen is such an iconic character. A very successful series of books, multiple movies, multiple TV shows, and to this day, the Ellery Queen magazine is one of those icons of mystery writing and mystery publishing. And we played through all the radio shows that I could find back at the time. We played 16 Golden Age American radio programs, a special one-hour recreation that the Ford Theater did of 1949 from Ellery Queen's first season on the air, and one Australian episode. And I was done. And then I came across a rare little episode, which was a public service program for the Office of War Information. And I thought we were just going to play that one episode. However, as I was getting ready to record the commentary for that episode, I found an Old Time Radio Ellery Queen collection that was posted at archive.org with not only that episode, but two additional episodes that I had not been previously aware of and weren't in circulation. And this was something that someone just threw up on the internet in November of 2023. So all of a sudden now, we will be having Ellery Queen for 3 weeks. And of course, I'm delighted, even though this is a last-minute change of plans. And I hate last-minute changes of plans. But if a surprise is going to strike, this is the type that I want. So we won't be bringing you the episode we teased yesterday. And while I thought we were going to get into The Thin Man and the single new episode of that I discovered next week, that's also going to be a while longer as we enjoy some of this really great classic American detective. And today we're going to bring you what's now the earliest episode in circulation. Ellery Queen's first series ran from 1939 to 40 and then returned in January of 1942 over NBC. And this is the 10th episode of that series featuring Carlton Young as Ellery Queen, Marion Shockley as Nikki Porter, Santos Ortega as Inspector Queen, and Ted DeCorsia as Sergeant Veeley. So here, from March the 12th, 1942, is the adventure of the income tax robbery.
Romo Seltzer presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Romo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective in person. Ellery Queen again gives you a chance to match wits with him as he relates a new story of a crime he alone unravels. And then, at the point where he was able to solve the mystery, he stops the play and gives you a chance to figure out the criminal's name. We have one guest here with us in the studio tonight, and another who is going to be interviewed on a long-distance telephone, Mayor Howard W. Jackson of Baltimore, Maryland. They have accepted Mr. Queen's challenge to solve the mystery before the solution is revealed. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective, and your host for the next half-hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's story concerns a detective who needed assistance in the solution of a very timely problem. But suppose I let you learn about it from him, as I did. I call it The Adventure of the Income Tax Robbery.
Ellery, there's a gentleman here to see you. Mr. Michael Brady.
Come in, Mr. Brady. Sit down.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Queen.
I know your old man. You're not the Mike Brady who used to pound a beat with my father in the old days.
The same, Mr. Queen.
Well, Mike, I'm glad to meet you.
But I understood the inspector to say that you're a private detective these days, Mr. Brady.
I am, Miss Porter.
A detective? Consulting a detective?
Well, you need advice on a case of yours, Mike.
It's this way, Mr. Queen. Hey, can anybody hear us? I wouldn't want to get around it.
You're all to death, Mike. Speak freely.
Mr. Queen, I've been robbed.
Robbed?
Last night. Nobody ever had a robbery like this.
What was stolen from you last night, Mike?
My federal income tax return.
Income tax return?
Yeah, you heard me. My income tax.
I'm sorry.
And all my papers and records I was using to make out my return, they were swiped, too.
And the deadline for filing the federal return is next Monday, 2 days from now. You are in a jam.
Jam? It'll take me months to round up duplicates of my records. Meanwhile, what do I say to the United States government?
Well, the United States government say to you, Mr. Brady.
Mike, did any of the papers stolen with your tax return contain valuable secret information?
Secrets? Say, Mr. Queen, those records of mine are dynamite. I ain't no ordinary private tick. I specialize in kleptomaniacs. Six of them.
Kleptomaniacs?
People who can't resist stealing, Nicky.
Oh, yes.
I suppose, Mike, your six clients come from wealthy families.
They're cream. My job is protecting the swipers from publicity and arrest. I'm hired by the families. They put all the bills, and I get a retainer for handling the project.
But why the theft of your income tax record?
Blackmail, Nicky. By stealing Mike's records, the thief procures the names of the six kleptomaniacs and their rich families.
And they pay through the schnoz to keep their names out in the papers. I spent years building up this business, and now I lose my clients. What am I going to do, Mr. Queen? I can't solve a case like that.
Just how did the theft occur, Mike?
Well, you see, my office is in a suite with three other tenants. We each got our own room, and we use a common reception room. Well, yesterday, around 6 p.m., I just put my return and records in my briefcase, and I was going to go home, when one of the other tenants, a Mrs. Carson, she come running into my office yelling there's a fire in the reception room. So I run out, and the other two tenants run out of their offices, and I find the sofa's on fire.
How long did it take you to put the fire out?
Oh, no more than 5 minutes, Mr. Queen. Then I go back to my room, take my briefcase, and go home. And when I get home, there's nothing in my briefcase but a newspaper.
Was it your briefcase, Mike?
No, it only looked like mine. Anyway, I hop right back to the office. But, of course, my briefcase is gone with the wind. The rat.
Could one of your three co-tenants have made the switch of briefcases during the fire, Mike?
Well, Mrs. Carson, who ran in to tell me about the fire, she's a public stenographer. She was with me all the time, so she couldn't have done it.
How about the other two tenants, Mr. Brady?
Well, one of them's a commercial artist named Leonardo Jones. He's a screwball enough to do anything. The other one's a little crumb named Joe Ziggy, a bookie. Either Jones or Ziggy might have switched briefcases on me while I was putting out the fire. Mr. Queen, get back my income tax and my record.
Gladly, Mike. First thing we'll do is have a chat with Mrs. Carson.
But why, Henry? She couldn't have stolen the briefcase if she was helping Mr. Brady put out the fire.
Mrs. Carson couldn't have switched the briefcases, Nicky, but her accomplice could.
You mean? Am I a dope? Of course. She starts the fire to get me out of my office. And then one of those two guys, Jones or Ziggy, goes in there and makes the switch. Come on, Mr. Queen. I'll take you right down to the office.
Right, Mike. Nicky, get your hat.
Right away.
Mr. Queen, think you can get back my income tax return and stuff before Monday?
Mike, I consider it my patriotic duty.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the problem of the income tax robbery as it was presented to Ellery Queen. At this time, we present the actual experience of one of our listeners, Mr. B.M. Bailey of Albany, New York.
He writes,
I own and operate a restaurant, which does a lively business and keeps me on the go until 8 every night. A few months ago, an organization of 175 members hired the entire restaurant for the evening and asked us to serve a special banquet. Well, a short while before the party was to start, I was so nervous and worried that my head began to ache. I was afraid all my work would be in vain and the whole affair a failure. At the suggestion of a customer, I took a dose of Bromo Seltzer, and by the time the special guest began to arrive, I'd forgotten that I ever had a headache. Everything went off 100%. And since then, a number of the guests have become regular customers. Believe me, I am sure thankful to Bromo Seltzer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bailey. And friends, the next time a headache threatens to keep you from doing your work or enjoying your fun, take a tip from Mr. Bailey's experience and try Bromo Seltzer. Yes, when you get one of those common sick headaches most of us get now and then as a result of nervous tension or smoking too much or otherwise overindulging, do as millions do. Take a Bromo Seltzer. Remember, only Bromo Seltzer can give you Bromo Seltzer results. And now let's rejoin Ellery, Nikki, and Private Detective Mike Brady as they arrive at Mike's office.
This is it, Mr. Queen. The reception room we all four use. There's the sofa that got burned.
Mike, which is Mrs. Carson's office?
That closed door there. I guess she ain't in yet. Too early in the morning.
Perhaps it's just as well. Nikki, take this.
What is it?
My automatic lockpicking gun. A very handy little gadget, Nikki, not sold to the general public.
What am I supposed to do with it?
Pick the lock on Mrs. Carson's door.
What?
Put the muzzle up against the opening of the lock and press the trigger. Like that. A child can operate it.
Like me? All right.
Meanwhile, Mike, let's go into your office. I want to examine that briefcase to see if substituted for yours.
Yes, sir. It's this one here. Here's the bag, Mr. Queen.
Not much hope of tracing this, Mike. It's a standard briefcase.
There's the newspaper stuffing inside. A rat.
Today's New York Times. But the briefcase might have been bought weeks ago in Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, anywhere.
Ellery?
Yes, Nikki, coming.
I can't get Mrs. Carson's door open with this lock-picking gun or whatever it is. I thought you said a child could work it.
A bright child, Nikki.
Mm-hmm. A child prodigy.
Watch, Nikki. See? Nothing to it.
Oh, Mr. Queen. Look.
Mike, is this Mrs. Carson?
Yeah. Mrs. Carson. Wake up, Mrs. Carson.
She don't move. She's
dead. Shot through the heart. Mike, phone my father at police headquarters. Inspector, I'm ruined. The publicity alone will ruin me. Why the heck was Mrs. Carson murdered, Inspector?
Because, Mike, she was the thief's accomplice. Later, after the fire last night, she and whoever swiped your briefcase met back here in the office. The accomplice, seeing how he could blackmail the kleptomaniac's family, decided it wasn't practical to split two ways. He shot the Carson woman to death so he could have all the future blackmail profits for himself.
Yes, Inspector Queen, but who was the thief?
Yep, Nicky, is what we've got to find out. Right. They're not getting water in here.
I'm just being right in here, brother.
Come on. Ellery, the man has been crying.
Quiet, Nicky, let Dad handle this.
All right, you. What's your name?
Carson. Max Carson.
Carson? Any relation to the woman found shot to death this morning?
She was my wife. I mean, we were divorced a year ago.
Inspector, Mrs. Carson once told me she ditched him because he hit the bottle too much. He's been after the second bite.
Okay, okay, Mike. Carson, you're the porter who cleans this suite of offices regularly, aren't you?
Yes, every night.
Medical examiner says your wife's been dead since around 8 o'clock last night. Didn't you go in there last night to clean up as usual?
Yes, sir. About 10 o'clock.
How come you didn't find the body?
I didn't know she was in there. All the offices were empty and open except in hers.
Didn't you find Mrs. Carson's door locked?
Yes, sir. So I thought she didn't want the room clean. If I'd have known, to think she was laying in there all the time, dead.
Okay, Carson. Let Carson go. Great, Carson, go home.
Come on, Carson.
Carson, maybe 6 feet really.
How long does it take that behemoth to get me some information?
Dad.
Yes, Henry.
How about having a go at the other two tenants of this suite? The artist, Leonardo Jones, and that bookmaker, Ziggy.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Get Jones and Ziggy in here.
Jones, Ziggy.
You, Ellery, your superior, if you understand. Come in, you two. Which one of you is Leonardo Jones, the commercial artist?
I'm Leonardo Jones, the painter. Why am I detained, you philistine, you saboteur of beauty?
Huh? Listen, Jones. Where were you during that little fire in this reception room last night?
My dear sir, all day, all night, I dissipate my genius throwing cakes of soap, bottles of perfume, boxes of mothballs, ladies' lingerie, a modern Da Vinci wasted on advertising posters. Must you add to my overflowing cup with your silly questions about a stupid little fire?
And look, Da Vinci, this isn't just a stupid little fire. It's a murder.
Murder? Who cares about murder? A dull, stupid, giggling public stenographer? What lost the key to the universe? I have a color illustration to finish of a baby eating crispy wispies.
Answer my question or you'll be eating crispy wispies in the tomb.
Dad. Mr. Jones, we have no intention of sabotaging the cause of art, commercial or otherwise. But where were you during that fire yesterday?
What is this curse that pursues me? Fire? I helped to put it out, sir.
You were present every moment. You didn't leave this reception room for an instant.
My dear sir, how can I remember an unimportant thing like that? This clod, Michael Brady, he was here. Perhaps he remembers if I was present every instant.
Mr. Jones, I was too busy putting the fire out, which maybe you wanted me to be.
Spawn. Well, then, this cringing troglodyte, this primitive organism, Ziggy. Ziggy was also present. Ziggy, did I leave this wretched room during the fire?
I don't know nothing. I don't remember nothing. In fact, I got no memory.
Ziggy, did you leave this wretched room during the fire?
Me? I was here. I was here all the time.
Ziggy?
Yeah, Inspector?
Were you the one who slipped into Mike Brady's office during that blaze last night and swept his briefcase? Answer me, you tin-horn bookmaking racetrack self.
I didn't take a step out of here, Inspector. I was working putting out that fire like Mayor LaGuardia. Honest, Inspector, I don't know...
Well, baby... What'd you do? Stop for a couple of days? Well?
I got the goods on both of them, Inspector.
Huh.
This odd guy Jones and Joe Ziggy, each of them came back here last night after the office was closed. The night elevator starter remembers both of them. Both before 8 o'clock, he says. Before Mrs. Carson was shot. But he don't remember when they left, Inspector.
Jones? Why did you come back last night?
Why did I come back, he asked. Sir, I came back for some cobalt blue. A cube of cobalt blue.
What's that?
It's a kind of paint, Dad. Mr. Jones, why did you do that?
Because, sir, at home, when I'm away from this accursed office, I paint for myself, not for advertising agencies. And I needed a particular color, cobalt. The art stores were closed.
Did you hear anything? Did you see Mrs. Carson?
Sir, I am not a camera. I am not a photoelectric cell. I am not a dictograph. I am an artist. I heard and saw precisely nothing.
Yeah, how about you? You come back here last night for some cobalt blue, too?
So help me, Inspector Crane. I don't know nothing. I had a couple of parties to buzz. Private calls, see? I thought confidentially. Some of my clients owe me some dough, and they've been trying to welch on me. So I come back and use my own phone, see?
No, Ziggy, I don't see. You haven't even got the brain to think of a decent excuse.
Ziggy, was the light on in Mrs. Carson's office when you came back last night? Did you see anyone?
How? I don't remember a thing.
Nene.
Yes, sir?
Move they go out of here before I strangle them with my bare hands. Hank, I've got to have a list of the six families you've been working for. Write the list out for me, Fondo.
They don't want publicity, Inspector. Alibi me with them, will you? Now, Miss Porter,
I've got a pencil for you.
Right here.
Dad, what have you in mind?
Yeah, Inspector, what's the idea of letting those monkeys go?
The Jimmy who stole Mike's record and put a bullet through Mrs. Carson. He needs money in a hurry, baby.
Oh. So he may start blackmailing one of these big shots right away. I see.
Yes, really. I'm going to warn them to tip me off if anyone approaches them for hush money.
And that's also why you've been letting your suspects out on a leash, Dad. Giving them a chance to start blackmailing.
You old fox.
Inspector, here's a list of my clients. You'll alibi me, won't you, Inspector?
Mike? You just sit tight and leave everything to Dick Queen. Huh? Ziggy, come in.
We just got some messages, sir.
Yes, Dad. Why did Hillary call to come down to headquarters?
Meet one of Mike Brady's clients. Mrs. Clementina Somerville. This is my son, Henry, and your secretary, Miss Porter. How do you do?
You do. Mrs. Somerville? Mrs. Somerville, I'm honored.
I must say, Inspector Green, I don't like this business of letting the entire world know about my troubles.
You mean there's someone in your family, Mrs. Somerville, or Captain Amiot?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Who is this snippet with the red hair?
Quiet, Nicky. I notified Mrs. Somerville of the danger of blackmail.
And here she is, only hours later, with a special delivery letter she just received.
From the blackmailer? Fast work.
Whoever it is must be desperate for money.
Mrs. Somerville, may I see the letter?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. Cheap notepaper, mailed at noon today. No clue from the postmark.
And written in block capitals. Please, careful.
Mrs. Somerville, be in the waiting room at Penn Station, 8 p.m. tonight. Bring $10,000 in little bills. Wear a veil and hold a gardenia in your left hand. Don't tell police. If there's any sign of cops tonight, I'll see to it every newspaper in New York gets the true story of how your granddaughter's been stealing stuff for years. I mean business. Carefully composed, this letter, Dad. Might be the work either of an educated or an uneducated person.
Makes no difference, and tonight will happen.
Oh, no, you won't, Inspector Creek. Huh? I promised, like a fool, to let you know if there was any attempt to blackmail me. And Clementina Somerville keeps her word. But I warn you, I want no interference from the authorities.
But, madam, the whole idea...
Surely, Mrs. Somerville, you're not going to pay $10,000 to this blackmailer.
Young man, I'd spend 10 times $10,000 to keep my granddaughter's name and photograph out of the paper.
But, Mrs. Somerville, this blackmailer committed murder.
None of my business. Now yours, young woman.
Now, wait a minute, Mrs. Somerville. You can't just...
Mr. Queen, if you put police in that waiting room at Pennsylvania Station tonight, if you frighten off this person, whoever it is, I'll sue you and the city of New York through every court in the state. Understand? Good afternoon.
Ooh, woo. What an old lady.
She certainly doesn't act for 70 years.
Oh, she can't sue us. But if she gets antagonistic, refuses to cooperate.
We'll do this, Dad. Nikki and Mike Brady and I can be at Penn Station tonight.
Oh, but
don't worry, Dad. Mrs. Somerville won't see us. As an added refinement, just before 8 o'clock tonight, have Sergeant Beatty pick up Leonardo Jones and Joe Ziggy and bring them down here to police headquarters for safekeeping.
At all rates, if either Jones or Ziggy is a criminal, he won't be able to keep his appointment with Mrs. Somerville in Penn Station.
Yes, son. What's the point?
If no one shows up at Penn Station tonight, Dad, while you detain Jones and Ziggy here, then we will have accomplished three things. Prevented Mrs. Somerville from giving $10,000 to a blackmailing murderer, narrowed the murder suspects down, and got a long way toward recovering Mike Brady's stolen income tax records.
We've been waiting a whole hour, Ellery, and nobody showed up.
Yeah, Mr. Crane, looks like old lady Somerville got herself in that veil and gardenia for nothing.
Just the same, keep your eyes open, Mike. Our man may still come. If you keep out of sight, we must let Mrs. Somerville see us.
Is she mad? Look at her, prancing up and down.
Hey, there she goes. Out of the waiting room.
Well, let's follow her too closely now. Any sign of someone we know? Nope.
Hurry, she's heading for the taxi.
She's given up. My plan did work. Mike, Nikki, back to police headquarters, quickly.
You harping stupid!
I know, but I got
imbecile. Why am I arrested,
Sergeant? What did I do?
Sit down. You must not be Inspector's run.
You're lucky, aren't you? You wait here in my office. Ellery, Mike, Nicky. Damn, you three were back.
Well, Dad. Oh, I see. Mrs. Jones and Ziggy are here. It's for the doctor's orders.
Well, son?
What happened, Mr. Queen? Anyone show up for the old battle axe or don't?
No, Sergeant. No one did.
We waited a whole hour.
And finally, Mrs. Somerville threw up the sponge.
Mike, that pins it right smack in the nose of one of these two bedbugs.
Yeah, Ziggy? Which of you two plan to meet Mrs. Somerville at Penn Station tonight, eh? I detest Penn Station. It's such bad art.
Why should I go to Penn Station, Inspector? I hate trains. I get sick on trains.
Which one of you sent that blackmail letter to Mrs. Somerville?
Which one of you shot Mrs. Carson to death?
Which one of you was the Carson woman's accomplice?
Which one of you saw Mike Brady's income tax report?
Count, Ziggy, which one?
Dad.
Sergeant. Yes, Ellie.
You may stop. No? I know who murdered Mrs. Carson. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. But have you a solution? Before we hear what our guest armchair detectives have to say, Ernest Chappell has some sound, sensible advice for you. Advice on what to do for headaches.
And, Frank, my advice is, if you want quick, effective relief from headache, take a Bromo-Seltzer.
Speedy?
You bet it's speedy. But Bromo-Seltzer is already dissolved when you take it. But most important of all, Bromo-Seltzer acts not just one, but three ways. It not only gives you swift, soothing relief from the actual pain itself, but in addition, it helps calm jumpy nerves, and it also helps settle upset stomach. You get effective relief. Quickly feel more fit, more like your old self again. Of course, if you have persistent or recurring headaches, you should see a doctor. But the next time you get a common sick headache, don't go on suffering needlessly. Take a Bromo-Seltzer and just see what a difference it makes. Honestly, you never know what quick, effective relief Bromo-Seltzer can give until you try it.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell. And now, Nikki, will you introduce our guest?
Well, our guest in the studio this evening is Mrs. Nanda Hudson of Orange, New Jersey. And on the long-distance telephone, Mayor Howard W. Jackson of Baltimore, Maryland, is waiting to tell us his solution.
That's fine, Nikki. Suppose you begin your quiz of Mayor Jackson while we're listening to Mrs. Hedstrom's deductions.
All right, Ellen. Hello, Mayor Jackson. This is Nikki Porter. What's your solution to the murder?
And what is your solution, Mrs. Hedstrom?
I believe that Mr. Jones committed the murder. Because, in the letter, all the letters were done in block capitals. And the person that was coming to the station had to wear a black veil and a white gardenia and all that. It's most artistic. And,
Have you any more clues?
What else can I think of?
I see. Well, thank you, Mrs. Hedstrom. And now, Nikki?
I have to go back now.
Nikki, what is Mayor Jackson's solution?
Well, Mayor Jackson said that he thinks the artist Jones did it. He thought that he wanted the money so that he could paint pictures for himself. And he said, I asked him if he had any other clues, and he said, no, he only had one clue, because being a good detective, he only worked on one clue at a time.
Thank you, Mayor Jackson and Mrs. Hedstrom. I'm not going to tell you whether or not your solutions are correct, because that wouldn't be fair to our audience. You'll all know soon enough as we return to police headquarters, where I'll show you how I solved the mystery of the income tax robbery.
Ellery, you know which one did it?
Which one was it, Mr. Quinn?
Leonardo Jones or Joe Ziggy?
Dad, there were three men who could not keep the appointment with Mrs. Somerville tonight.
Three men, Mr. Quinn?
Yes, Mike.
Well, there was Jones and Ziggy, Mr. Quinn, but who else?
You, Mike.
Mike
Brady? Yes, Mike Brady. He couldn't keep the appointment with Mrs. Somerville because he was with Nikki and me.
You? It's there, Mike.
Ellery, Mr. Brady stole his own income tax return and record?
Mike here killed Mrs. Carson.
Sent a blackmail letter to Mrs. Somerville?
That summarizes it exactly.
With what, son? How?
Suppose a little, Dad. Mr. Mike Brady can correct me if I go wrong in certain of my suppositions. Let's suppose Mike needed money in a hurry. Needed money very badly. Huh, Mike? He gets a brainstorm. Instead of collecting a modest retainer from six wealthy families, why not blackmail them for big money? Good idea, huh, Mike? Ah, but the sudden switch from mere keeper of the kleptomaniacs to blackmailer has its dangers. If one of the intended victims should complain to the police, suspicion is bound to point to friend Brady. So he conceives the idea of making it look as if someone else is the blackmailer. To do that, he stages a fake robbery, making it seem as if someone else had got possession of the records relating to the kleptomaniacs.
Don't look at me that way, Inspector. I was in a hole. I needed money bad.
Harry? Why did Mike bump off Mrs. Carson?
I've no idea. I didn't need Mike's murder motive to pin this crime on him. Why did you, Mike?
I got involved with her. She wanted me to... Well, to marry her.
So you fooled Mrs. Carson into thinking she would become Mrs. Brady. Got her to be your accomplice to start the fire in the reception room. That brought Jones and Ziggy running out, making it look as if one of them stole your briefcase. Then later last night, you came back to the office. You told me that yourself, Mike. You came back and you shot Mrs. Carson to get rid of a woman you wanted neither to marry nor to share your expected blackmail profits.
Besides being a criminal, Mike, you're a fool. Why did you start blackmailing Mrs. Somerville so soon?
I've been playing poker with a gang of sharks. I got deep in a hole and needed $10,000 to pay off right away.
My Christ! To try to get hush money right under our noses.
Nor did you think, Mike, that I would ask you to go along tonight to Penn Station with me. That spoiled tonight's game, didn't it? But you had to do it for the same reason you asked my help in the first place. To preserve your appearance of innocence.
But, Ellery, how did you know Mr. Brady was the guilty one to begin with?
Yes, son. So far, this has been mostly speculation.
Speculation, Dad, based upon a clue. A clue that pointed squarely to Mike. Mike said he was robbed during the fire yesterday at 6 p.m., didn't he, Nikki?
Yes, Ellery.
He said he opened his briefcase as soon as he got home after the fire, that is, right after 6 p.m., and found it full of newspaper, right?
Yes, but...
That means the newspaper, if Mike's story was true, had been stuffed into the briefcase before 6 p.m. yesterday. Well, then, how recent could that paper have been? Answer, at the latest, last night's edition of an evening newspaper. But when I examined the briefcase this morning and looked at the newspaper stuffed in it, what paper did I say it was? Today's New York Times. How could today's newspaper have been stuffed into that briefcase before 6 p.m. yesterday? Answer, it couldn't have been. Deduction, Mike Brady lied. He wasn't robbed last night at all. But if Mike was never robbed, then his whole story collapses and he's the guilty man. Yes, Mr. Brady, I solved this case in time for you to send your income tax return to the United States government, but you'll have to change your address on it to Sing Sing Prison. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the murder. I want to thank our guests, Mayor Howard Jackson and Mrs. Hedstrom, for appearing as armchair detectives this evening. I'd like to present each of our guests with this memento from Bromo Seltzer.
And also two personal gifts from Mr. Creed. An autographed copy of his latest book, 101 Years Entertainment, and this four-year subscription to the new periodical Mr. Queen is editing, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Ellery Queen will be back in just a moment to tell you about next week's exciting mystery. But right now, friends, don't forget, the next time you have a headache, promise me that...
Welcome back! There were some rough patches of sound in there, but to have an all-new-to-us Ellery Queen adventure, I'll take it. This was an interesting case. I do wonder whether the wealthy woman could have sued the city. Plus, if her aim was to keep her granddaughter from getting publicity, that'd be a pretty foolish way to do it. Thankfully, Inspector Queen outsmarted her, and the whole situation was avoided. The armchair detective... setup was interesting. This is the earliest intact recording we have of one, and it's a different method than we've heard before. And I think with the series being new to NBC, there's some experimentation as to how they were going to do it. The series had been at CBS in its first run, and as a 60-minute program, they had actually had four armchair detectives initially with the hour format and then reduced to two. Having one detective on the phone and one in the studio is one way to do it that's time-saving, but kind of negates the point of having two. It's nice to hear both voices and maybe even have them react to each other. Getting it secondhand from Nikki is not as satisfying. Still, it does affirm that the detective scheme was clever enough to throw probable pursuers off his trail, and it looks like he was trying to frame the artist. Mayor Jackson was right, particularly as a matter of strategy for an Ellery Queen mystery, that in those mysteries, one clue really is the important one. The problem is that he just focused on the wrong one. Still, I give him credit. I can't imagine a politician in our age of social media going on one of these programs and risking being found wrong. The trolls on social media would eat them alive. Well, now it's time to thank our Patreon supporter of the day, and I want to go ahead and thank GBO. GBO has been one of our Patreon supporters since December 2022, currently supporting the podcast at the Seamus level of $4 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support. And that will do it for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software and be sure to rate and review the podcast wherever you download it from. We will be back next Tuesday with another episode of Ellery Queen, but join us back here tomorrow for Dangerous Assignment, where...
The little gent comfortably settled in a chair, he bounces out of it, and the second he sees me, a gun suddenly appears in his mitt.
Well, if it ain't Mr. Mitchell.
Hello, Deacon.
Fancy you starting in here.
Well, we all have our bad days.
Come on in, Mr. Mitchell. Come on in. Well. Think this cozy now. What brings you here, if I might ask?
I was about to conduct a little transaction, but you've sort of complicated things.
Oh, that's a shame. That's a real shame. That's what it is.
I thought the Australian police would have you under lock and key by this time.
Not me, Governor. Not Albert Deakin. You tried hard enough.
Well, we got the boys we were after and left a small fry like you to the local law.
No small fry no longer, Mr. Mitchell. Sit down, make yourself comfortable, and don't try any funny moves if this little pop gun goes off, see?
I get the picture, Deacon.
This little transaction you mentioned. It's with the Mademoiselle, I imagine. Oh, good. We'll just wait here until she comes along.
I hope you'll be with us then. In the meantime, do send your comments to box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.